because of the height and the spacing of the lights. He stood a yard inside the traffic lane and stuck out his thumb. He turned half sideways, like a Hollywood pose, so his profile was presented at an angle, so visually his bulk was minimized. Nothing he could do about his height, but the less threatening, the better. He was an experienced hitchhiker. He knew he was subject to snap decisions. It was a pickup truck, a big one, a crew cab. Japanese, lots of chrome and lots of shiny paint. It slowed down, came close. The driver's face was lit up red from the instrument panel. Not going to happen, Reacher thought. The driver was a woman. She'd have to be nuts. The truck stopped. It was a Honda, dark red metallic. The window buzzed down. There was a dog on the back seat, like a German shepherd, but bigger, about the size of a pony, maybe a freak mutation. It had teeth the size of rifle ammunition. The woman leaned across the console. She had dark hair up in a knot. She was wearing a dark red shirt. She was about 45 years old. She said, "Where are you headed?" Reacher said, "I need to get on I-90.
"Hop right in. That's near where I'm going."
"You sure?"
"About where I'm going?"
"About me hopping in, from the safety point of view. You don't know me. As a matter of fact, I'm not a threat, but I would say that anyway, right?"
"I have a savage dog in here."
"I might be armed. The obvious play would be shoot the dog first, or cut its throat, and then start on you. That's what I would be worried about. Professionally speaking, I mean."
"You a cop?"
"I was in the military police."
"You armed?"
"No."
"Then hop in."
She was a farmer, she said, with a lot of dairy cattle on a lot of acres. Doing well, Reacher figured, judging by her car. It felt about as wide as a Humvee inside. It was upholstered in quilted leather. It was as silent as a limousine. They talked. He asked if she had always been a farmer, and she said yes, 4 generations. She asked him what he did for a living, and he said he was between jobs. The giant dog followed the conversation from the back seat, turning its wicked head one way and then the other. An hour later, she stopped and let him out at the I-90 Cloverleaf. He thanked her and waved her away. She was a nice person, one of the random encounters that made his life what it was. Then he walked to the westbound ramp and started over, standing at an angle, 1 foot on the rumble strip, the other in the traffic lane, with his thumb out wide. Nearly 700 miles away, in his office behind his laundromat in Rapid City, Arthur Scorpio was clearing the last of the day's texts and emails and voicemails off his phone. He got the Jimmy Rats message and heard, "I didn't tell him anything, but he already found me somehow, so what I'm thinking is maybe he'll somehow find you, too." Which, translated into plain English, meant, "I snitched on you, and a guy is definitely on his way." So in the long term, no more business for Jimmy Rat. And in the short term, defensive measures might have to be considered. Scorpio called his secretary at home. She was on her way to bed. He asked her, "Who or what is Bigfoot?" She said,
"He's a giant ape man who lives in the woods, on the slopes in the northwest. About 7 feet tall and covered in hair, eats bears and cattle. One rancher lost 1,000 head over the years."
"Where was this?"
"Nowhere," the secretary said. "It's imaginary, like a fairy tale."
Scorpio said, "Huh." Then he disconnected and made 2 more calls, both to reliable guys he knew, and then he locked up his laundromat and drove himself home. Chapter 6 Close to midnight, Reacher got a ride in a shiny, stainless steel truck carrying 5,000 gallons of organic milk in a tank shaped like a boat-tail bullet. It was headed to Sioux Falls, which was the western limit of that particular dairy's distribution area, but which was still more than 350 miles short of Rapid City. "Don't worry," the driver said. Onward rides would be easy to get. There was a truck stop with all kinds of traffic night and day. A real big place, like the crossroads of the world. Richard kept the guy talking all the way through Minnesota, which he figured was his job, like human amphetamine. Anything to keep the guy awake. Anything to avoid the old joke, "I want to die peacefully in my sleep like Grandpa," not screaming in terror like his passengers. The resulting conversation spiraled off in all kinds of different directions. Institutional injustices in the milk business were exposed. Grievances were aired. Then the guy wanted to hear war stories, so Reacher made some up. The big truck stop came along soon enough. The guy had not been exaggerating. There was an acres-wide fuel stop and a spreading two-story motel 100 yards long and a warehouse-sized family restaurant blazing with neon outside and fluorescence inside. There were back-to-back 18-wheelers wheezing in and out, and all kinds of cars and trucks and panel vans. Reacher climbed out of the milk tanker and headed straight for the motel office, where he took a room, even though it was already close to dawn. No point arriving in Rapid City all tired and exhausted. No point arriving exactly when expected, either. Obviously, Jimmy Rat would have called Arthur Scorpio. Some kind of a get-in-first, cuff-your-ass play, as in, "It wasn't me, honest, but I think someone dimed you out." Which wouldn't necessarily be believed in every particular, but which would certainly be acted upon as a distant early warning. There's something out there. The oldest fear in human history. Scorpio would post sentries right away. And so in turn, Reacher would make them stare at a whole lot of nothing for the first day. To dull them down. To sap their enthusiasm. To make them yawn and blink. Always better to engage at a time of your own choosing. So he ate breakfast in the bustling restaurant, and then he headed back to his room and took a shower and went to bed just as the sun rose, with the tiny West Point ring on the night table beside him. At that point, more than 350 miles away to the west in Rapid City, Detective Gloria Nakamura was already up and about. She had woken before dawn and showered and dressed and eaten breakfast. Now she was heading out, a whole hour early, to work, but not yet. She commuted in her own car, which was a mid-sized Chevy sedan. It was pale blue and as anonymous as a rental. She drove through downtown and turned off the main drag toward Arthur Scorpio's territory. He owned a whole city block. His laundromat was in the center building, like a flagship operation. The block fronted on a cracked concrete cross street with a narrow sidewalk featuring a dead tree in a bone-dry pit. Running down the back of the block was a service alley for deliveries and trash collection. She tried the alley first. It was patched and narrow. Overhead, a skein of power lines and phone wires looped left and right from tilted poles. There was a guy outside the laundromat's back door. He was leaning on the wall with his arms folded. He was in a short black coat against the dawn chill, a black sweater under it, black pants, black shoes. He was more than 6 feet tall and heavy, about twice Nakamura's size. He was wide awake and watchful. She wanted to take a cell phone picture for the endless file, but she couldn't be obvious about it. She had heard nothing from her boss. Surveillance had not been officially reauthorized. So she swiped through the camera and put the phone to her ear next to her window as if she was taking a call, and she drove slowly by, eyes front, furtively dabbing with her thumb, click, 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 until the sentry was well behind her. Then she turned left out of the alley and left again and drove past the front of the building. There was another guy at the front door, same deal, leaning on the wall, watchful, arms crossed, dressed in black, like a nightclub bouncer. No velvet robe. Nakamura put her phone to her ear. Click, click, click. She turned right at the end of the block and parked on the street where the guy couldn't see her. She checked her pictures. Both sets were tilted and blurry, and neither had the subject anywhere near the center of the frame. But the building was recognizable. The overall context was clear. The narrative told a story. Scorpio had gotten word from Wisconsin and had immediately hired security. Local muscle. Two guys, one in front, one in back. Because Scorpio was at least somewhat worried about Bigfoot. Who was... where? Incoming, Nakamura thought. Had to be. He seemed set on working his way along the chain of supply. She got out of her car. She walked back the same way she had come and turned in on Scorpio's street. She stayed on the opposite sidewalk. The guy at the laundromat's door saw her. She felt his eyes on her. He didn't move, just watched. She kept walking. There was a breakfast place almost opposite the laundromat. Not Scorpio's, his neighbor's. It had an undersized front window, but if you took the first table and craned up in your chair, you got a pretty good view. Nakamura had spent hours in there. She pushed in the door. Her table was taken by a guy with the ruins of a bacon and egg breakfast pushed away from him and a half-full cup of coffee cradled in its place. He was a neat, compact man in a collar and tie and a dark conventional suit made of sensible, hard-wearing fibers. His hair was neatly brushed. He was somewhere over 50, but how much of it was hard to say. His hair was still brown. He had a lean and ageless face. He could have been 60. He could have been 70. He was watching the laundromat through the window. Had to be. Nakamura knew the signs. He wasn't craning up in his chair, because although not tall, he was taller than she was. But even so, his back was unnaturally straight. Had to be, to get his eye line up over the sill. And his gaze was unwavering. He never looked down. He found his cup by feel and raised it blind and watched over the rim while sipping. Was this Bigfoot? Take him seriously, the voice from Wisconsin had said. And certainly the guy at the table looked like he should be taken seriously. Deep down there was something hard and competent about him. Not immediately obvious. His expression was amiable. But he had limited patience. He wasn't to be messed with. That was clear. Theoretically, it was possible to imagine him as a quiet and deadly foe of some sort. It was possible to imagine him as the kind of man who might merit a whispered, heads-up voicemail, with an urgent warning and a pithy description. But the description would not have been, like Bigfoot come out of the forest. Not for this man. It would have been a reference to a spy movie, perhaps, about a faceless KGB killer blending in with the crowd. It would have been about how neat he was, how physically unobtrusive. He was almost dapper. He was the opposite of Bigfoot. So who was he? One sure way to find out. She sat down across from him and took her badge from her purse. It was in a department-issued vinyl wallet opposite a photo ID behind a plastic window. Nakamura, Gloria, detective, and her signature and her picture. The guy took a pair of tortoise-shell reading glasses from an inside pocket and put them on. He glanced at the ID and glanced away. He took a small notebook from another inside pocket. He opened it with his thumb. He glanced at it, changed pages, and glanced away. He said,
"You're with Property Crimes."
"You got us all listed in there?"
"Yes," he said.
"Why?"
"I like to know who does what in a place."
"What are you doing here?"
"My job."
"What's your name?"
"Bramall,"
the guy said.
"First name Terrence, but you can call me Terry."
"And what's your job, Mr. Bramall?"
"I'm a private investigator."
"From where?"
"Chicago."
"What brings you to Rapid City?"
A private investigation.
"Of Arthur Scorpio?"
"I'm afraid I'm bound by a certain degree of confidentiality, unless and until I believe a crime has been or is about to be committed, which I don't at this moment."
Nakamura said, "I need to know whether you're for him or against him."
"Oh, like that, is it?"
"He won't be voted Citizen of the Year."
"He's not my client, if that's what you mean."
"Who is?"
"I can't say."
Nakamura asked, "Do you have a partner?"
"Romantically?"
Bramall said.
"Or professionally?"
"Professionally."
"No."
"Are you part of an agency?"
"Why do you ask?"
"We heard someone was on his way here." "Not you, someone else. He was in Wisconsin yesterday. I wondered if he was an associate."
"Not mine,"
Bramall said.
"I'm a one-man band."
Nakamura took a business card from her purse. She put it on the table near Bramall's coffee cup. She said,
"Call me if you need me, or if you decide to take the confidentiality stick out of your ass, or if you need advice. Scorpio is a dangerous man. Never forget that."
"Thank you,"
Bramall said, his eyes on the window. Nakamura walked back to her car, with the guy at the laundromat door watching her all the way. She drove to work and got there early. She woke her computer and opened a search engine. She typed, "Bramall, Terrence, Private Investigator, Chicago." She got a bunch of hits. The guy was 67 years old. He was retired FBI. A long and distinguished career. Many successful cases. Senior rank, multiple medals and awards. Now he was in business on his own account. He was high-end. He didn't advertise. He was hard to get. He was expensive. He was a true specialist. He offered only one service. All he did was find missing persons. Chapter 7. Reacher woke himself up when he figured the lunch rush would be over. He felt okay after his exertions the previous evening. No real aches or pains. He checked the mirror. He had a light bruise on his forehead from headbutting the fourth guy, and his right forearm was tender. It had dispatched three of them all by itself, fully 50%. Along the bone, there was nothing to bruise, but the skin looked about twice as thick as normal, and red, with tiny puncture wounds here and there. even through his shirt sleeve, which happened. Teeth, usually, or chips of bone from broken noses or eye sockets. Collateral damage, but really nothing to worry about. He was in good shape. Same old, on another lonely day. He showered and dressed and walked over to the emptying restaurant and ate off the all-day breakfast menu. He asked for quarters in his change and stopped at a payphone near the door. He dialed an ancient number from memory. It rang twice and was answered.
West Point, a woman's voice said. Superintendent's office, how may I help you?
Good afternoon, ma'am, Reacher said. I'm a graduate of the academy, and I have an inquiry I'm sure will end up in your office anyway, so I figured I might as well start there.
May I have your name, sir?
Reacher gave it, and his date of birth, and his service number, and his graduation year. He heard the woman write it all down. She said,
What is the nature of your inquiry?
I need to identify a female cadet from the class of 2005. Her initials were SRS, and she was small. That's all I've got so far. He heard her write it down. She said,
Are you a journalist?
No, ma'am.
Do you work in law enforcement?
Not currently.
Then why do you need to make this identification?
I have lost property to return.
You can send it here. We can forward it.
I know you can, Reacher said, and I know why you're suggesting we do it that way. You have all kinds of security issues to worry about now. Privacy rights, too. Not like it was when I was there. I understand that completely. You really shouldn't tell me anything, which is fine. I don't want to put you on the spot, believe me.
Then we seem to understand each other.
Just do me one favor. Look her up, and then look me up. Consider all the possible circumstances. Either you'll be kind of happy you didn't give me a name, or you'll be kind of sorry. I'll call you back sometime, and you can tell me which it was, purely out of interest.
Why would I be sorry? I followed procedure.
Because in the end you'll realize that right now was the first faint whisper you ever heard, that a West Pointer with the initials SRS was in some kind of trouble somewhere, maybe alone, and in need of help. Afterward, you'll wish you'd taken it seriously from the beginning. You'll be sorry you didn't tell me sooner.
Who are you, exactly?
Look me up, Reacher said. The voice said, Call me back. Reacher walked the length of the motel to an area near the fuel pumps, where a kind of unofficial hitchhiking market was being run by a homeless-looking guy wearing a coat tied up with rope. He would collect the desired destination from each new arriving hitchhiker, and then he would walk around shouting it out to the drivers in line for the pumps, and sooner or later one or another would wave and agree to some particular destination, and the lucky hitchhiker would tip the shouting guy a dollar and climb up in the cab. Good business. Reacher was happy to pay a buck. Not that he would need help or luck. Every single driver was going to Rapid City. It was 350 miles away, but it was the first stop. There wasn't much before it. After it, there were choices, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, but everyone had to pass through Rapid City first. He got a ride inside about a minute and a half in a huge red truck pulling a white boxed-in trailer. The cab had a quadruple sleeper pod behind the seats, bigger than some accommodations Reacher had been raised in. For cross-country house-moving jobs, the driver said. The whole crew could sleep in the vehicle, saved on motels. The guy was old, like a lot of drivers. Maybe it was a fading profession. Maybe it had gotten too hard. Reacher thought the last of the frontier would die with it. Those guys were the final generation, the end of the DNA. Now people wanted to be home every night. The guy said it would be 5 hours and 5 minutes to Rapid City. He said it with the kind of confidence that comes from having done it 1,000 times before. They rolled out, sitting way up high with a clear view to the horizon, and they ground up through the gears and up until they were bowling along at more than 70 on the flat and faster still on the downgrades. The mile markers flashed past. 5 hours and 5 minutes seemed dead on. Plausible. As always, the driver wanted to know where his temporary passenger was traveling to and why, as if in payment. A long story for a long distance. For some reason, Reacher told him the truth. The pawn shop, the ring, his compulsion to find out what connected the two, which he said he couldn't entirely explain. The driver chewed on it all for 10 whole miles. Then he said,
"My wife would say you feel guilty about something."
Reacher didn't answer.
"She reads books," the driver said. "She thinks about things."
"I don't even know who this woman is. I don't know her name. I never met her. How could I feel guilty about her? All I know is she sold her ring."
"Doesn't have to be about her. There's a word, transference, I think,
or projection.
Although that might be something different. My wife would say you feel guilty about a separate issue."
"Would it have to be related?"
"Broadly, I suppose. Not necessarily that you made some other woman sell her jewelry, too. Doesn't have to be obvious. My wife would say it might be some other failure or injustice."
Reacher said nothing.
"My wife would ask if you had a wife or girlfriend to talk things over with."
Chang would be halfway through her first full day back to work. Maybe she had new cases. Maybe she was already back at the airport.
"Tell your wife to keep on reading," Reacher said. "He sounds like a very smart woman."
As so often, getting from the highway to the city was the hardest part of the trip. The red truck was too big for downtown. Reacher got out at the Cloverleaf at 7:50 in the evening, after 5 hours and 5 minutes, exactly. He stretched and breathed and set out looking for a local ride. There was plenty of traffic. Plenty of pickup trucks and SUVs and regular cars, but there was the wrong frame of mind. They were all coming off the highway. They were all on their last lap, all almost home, almost there, almost to the bar, almost to the girlfriend's house, almost to wherever. They all sped past. No one was in the mood to offer a ride. Not then. Did not compute. Rides were offered at the start of a journey, not at the end. Best hope in such a situation would always be a guy who had shaken his head 300 miles ago and then regretted it all the way since, mostly a self-image thing. Such a guy was cooler than that. Such a guy would stop in his last few miles, maybe secretly hoping his limited offer would get a rueful refusal, thereby salving his conscience at zero personal cost, but also weirdly happy to actually go ahead and pick a guy up and drive him 5 or 10 miles. In Reacher's experience, given the traffic density, such a guy would come along about every 20 or 25 minutes. Visibility was key. The earlier they saw you, the better your chances. More time for the cool guy thing to kick back in. Enough space to glide to a casual stop and lean across with a smile. In the end, it took 40 minutes. At 8:30 exactly, a Dodge crew cab pulled over. The driver put on a generous but apologetic expression and said he was going only as far as downtown. Reacher said that was great. He said he needed the part with the cheap motels. The guy said he would be passing by that general area about two streets over and would be happy to point the way. The cheap part of downtown was dark. Daylight was long gone. There were lights on some street corners, and some of them worked, but not enough. Reacher got out of the Dodge and walked a long block west, mostly by feel, with visibility about a yard. And then another block just the same. And then he turned left, and as promised, he found two side-by-side motels on a strip that also featured a diner and a gas station and a tire shop, which likely meant it was a popular route in and out of town. The right-hand motel had a tall, lit-up sign with come-on offers stacked up vertically like logs in a pile. Free breakfast, free cable, free Wi-Fi, free upgrades. The left-hand motel had free everything, which Reacher doubted. Not the actual accommodation itself, surely, but nothing ventured, nothing gained. There was an old lady at the desk. She was slender and refined. She had blue hair spun as fine as cotton candy. She was maybe 80. Maybe she was the original owner from way back long ago. Reacher asked his question, and she smiled and said, no, he had to pay for his room, but everything else was included. She said it with a half-amused look in her eye, up and then down, and he sensed she meant free everything partly as a response to her neighbor's boasting, whether good-humored or teasing or edgy, all in the eye of the beholder. But also, partly she meant it as a despairing lament that these days, whatever you did, there was always someone in the world prepared to do it cheaper. Where could she go after free? Reacher paid for a room. He asked her, where could I wash my clothes around here?
What clothes?
She said.
You don't have a bag.
Theoretically. Suppose I got a bag.
You would go to a laundromat?
How many do you have?
How many do you need?
Some might be better than others.
Are you worried about bed bugs? You shouldn't be. That's what laundromats are for. Turn the dryer on high and you kill them stone dead. That's what I do here. With the sheets.
Good to know, Reacher said. How many laundromats are there in Rapid City? I'm curious, is all. I like to know things. She thought about it and almost answered, but then she stopped herself, too naturally meticulous to rely on memory alone. She wanted corroboration. She took a thin Yellow Pages from a drawer. She checked under L and again under C for coin operated.
Three,
she said. Do you know the owners? Again, she thought about it, at first looking skeptical, as if the question was odd and such acquaintances unlikely. But then her face changed, as if she was recalling old trade associations and local business campaigns and rubber chicken and cocktail parties. She said,
actually, I do know two of the three.
What are their names?
Does it matter?
I'm looking for a man named Arthur Scorpio.
He's the third of the three, she said. I don't know him at all.
But you know the name.
This is a small town. We gossip.
And?
He's not well spoken of.
In what way?
Just gossip, I shouldn't repeat it, but a friend with a great-nephew in the police department says they have a file on Mr. Scorpio 3 inches thick.
He buys and sells stolen property, Reacher said. That's the story I got.
Are you a policeman?
No, just a regular guy.
What do you want from Arthur Scorpio?
I want to ask him a question.
You should proceed with great caution. Mr. Scorpio has a reputation for hostility.
I'll ask politely, Reacher said. There was a Rapid City street plan in the front of the Yellow Pages. The old lady tore it out very carefully, and she marked where the motel was and where Scorpio's laundromat was. She folded the page in quarters and gave it to Reacher. For the morning, no doubt, she assumed, but he went straight there. Nearly 10 o'clock in the evening. He walked long, pitch-dark blocks, checking the old lady's map wherever he found a bulb that worked, and then up ahead he saw the glow of neon, a late-night convenience store on a corner. According to the old lady's map, Scorpio's laundromat was across the street and halfway down the block. Reacher found it right where it should be, just beyond a dead tree. It was in the middle of the block, in the center unit of a larger structure that ran from corner to corner. It was currently closed for business. The lights were off, the door was locked, and it had a padlocked chain wrapped through the handles. The door was glass, with a wider window next to it. Inside was gloom, with a row of stacked machines on one wall, ghostly white and bulky, and a row of plastic lawn chairs on the other, below dispensers for change and soap and fabric conditioner and dryer sheets. Everything seemed to cost a dollar. Across the street was the lit-up convenience store way on the left, and then a shoe outlet, and then a couple of empty units dead ahead, and then a little right of center was a breakfast place, a real greasy spoon. Its front window was small, but its line of sight would be good. Its food, too, probably. And its coffee. Reacher made a mental note. Then he walked around the block and located the laundromat's rear door in an alley. It was a blank, fireproof slab, made of metal. A standard industrial product, nothing special. A zoning requirement, maybe. Or insurance. It was locked. He walked back. He paced out the depth of the building from the alley to the street. Too much. It was about twice the depth he could see through the laundromat's window, which meant there was another room in back, about equal in size. A storeroom, maybe, or offices, where business was done. That gave rise to gossip. He stood in the dark a minute more and then headed back the way he had come. On the opposite corner, he stopped in at the convenience store. He figured a cup of coffee would be a good idea. Maybe a sandwich. He was hungry. There was another guy in there, on the same mission. He was standing at the deli counter, sipping from a Go cup. He was a small man, neat and compact, in a dark suit and a necktie. Apparently, he had ordered an elaborate construction involving a fried egg and a large quantity of grated cheese. Clearly, not worried about cholesterol. The counterman finished his work and wrapped the sloppy result first in paper and then in aluminum foil. He handed it over, and the guy in the suit turned and stepped around Reacher and headed for the door. Reacher ordered his go-to, which was roast beef and Swiss cheese with mayo and mustard on white bread, plus coffee. The counterman turned away and spun up the slicing machine. Reacher asked him, "What do you know about the laundromat down the block?" The guy turned back. The blade hissed and sung behind him. He looked puzzled at first, and then a little hostile, as if he suspected someone was making fun of him. Then he looked preoccupied, as if he was struggling with a difficult arithmetic calculation and coming out with an answer he liked but didn't trust. He said,
"That's what the other guy just asked,"
Reacher said. "The guy with the fried egg sandwich?"
"But what does that kind of guy need with a laundromat? The suits go to the dry cleaner and the shirts get starched for a buck and a half, am I right?"
"I'll be back in a second," Reacher said. He stepped to the door and out to the sidewalk. No sign of the guy in the suit and the tie. No echo of lonely nighttime footsteps. Reacher came back in and stepped back to the counter, and the guy making his sandwich said,
"He would need to wash his underwear, maybe, and socks. But all the hotels had laundry bags in the closet. A guy like that wouldn't sit and watch the soap suds go around and around."
"You think he's staying in a hotel?"
"He's not local. Did you get a look at him? He's some kind of a professional person. I would say a lawyer in town to try a big case, but he didn't look rich enough. So now I'm thinking IRS or something, a government worker. And then you asked the same question about the laundromat. I don't think you're IRS, but you could be a cop. So now I'm thinking Arthur Scorpio has got trouble coming."
"How do you feel about that?"
"Depends."
"On what?"
"Whether it works. Mr. Scorpio has been in trouble before. Nothing ever sticks."
Chapter 8 The next morning, Reacher left his not-free room just as the sun was coming up. He retraced his steps from the night before, until the last couple of blocks, which he looped around at a distance, until he was beyond them. Then he doubled back towards Scorpio's alley from the far side, and he peeked in. There was a sentry posted at the laundromat's rear door. Leaning on the wall, arms folded, short black coat, black sweater, black pants and shoes. Maybe 40 years old, maybe 6'2", maybe 210. Reacher backed away and looped around again at the same distance he had used before. 2 blocks over, 2 blocks down, so he could approach the breakfast place unseen from the rear. He figured it would have an alley of its own behind it, like Scorpio's place, a necessary amenity. Greasy spoons generated a lot of trash. Eggshells, coffee grounds, packaging, leftovers, drums of used grease. And where there was an alley would be a kitchen door. It would be open. Almost certainly a legal requirement. This door must remain unlocked during business hours. To act as a fire escape for the cook. Another necessary amenity. Greasy spoon kitchens burned like napalm. Reacher found the alley, found the door. He went in through the kitchen, into the dining room. He focused on the window and stepped left for a better view. There was a second sentry at the laundromat's front door. Same kind of guy, same kind of pose. Leaning on the wall, impassive, dressed in black. Arthur Scorpio was taking precautions. There's something out there. Reacher looked away and looked around the room and saw the guy he had seen the night before in the convenience store. In the dark suit and the necktie. He was at the table under the window, looking out. Detective Gloria Nakamura repeated her routine from the previous day. Up before dawn, showered, dressed, breakfasted, and out the door a whole hour early. To work, but not yet. She parked where she had before and turned in on Scorpio Street, and felt the guy at the laundromat door watching her all the way. She walked to the breakfast place and went in. Her table was taken, again, by the same guy as the day before. Brammel, Terence, P. private investigator, Chicago. The same dark suit, a fresh shirt, a different tie. And standing in the middle of the room was Bigfoot. No doubt about it. The guy was huge. Not quite 7 feet, but close, almost to the ceiling. And he was wide. From shoulder to shoulder, he looked like 4 basketballs in a rack in her high school gym. He had fists like Thanksgiving turkeys. He was wearing canvas work pants and a huge black T-shirt. His forearms were battered and sculpted. His hair was a mess, like he had toweled it dry but not combed it, like he didn't even own a comb. He hadn't shaved in days. His face was all bone and stubble. His eyes were pale blue, like her car, and he was looking straight at her. Richard saw a petite Asian woman wearing a black skirt suit like a uniform, 5 feet nothing, maybe 95 pounds soaking wet, maybe 30 years old. Long black hair, big dark eyes, cute as a button, but no smile. A severe expression instead, as if she was in charge of something important, as if looking severe was the only way to stay in charge of it, which was possibly true when you were starting out from 5 feet nothing and 95 pounds. But whatever, she certainly wasn't shy. She was looking straight back at him, openly, examining him top to bottom and side to side, with some kind of dawning recognition in her eyes, which he didn't understand. Not at first. He was pretty sure he had never seen her before. He felt he would remember. Then he figured Jimmy Rat would have included a description in the cover-your-ass phone call he must have made. A big guy in a black T-shirt is coming. Maybe the Asian woman worked for Arthur Scorpio. Maybe she had been briefed about the emergency. Or maybe she was just an office worker, grumpy about her early start. He looked away. The guy in the necktie was still staring out the window. His expression was patient and contained, and equable. He looked like the type of guy who would give a polite answer to a reasonable question, but maybe only as a professional veneer. As if he held a place in a hierarchy where old-fashioned courtesy oiled the wheels. He reminded Reacher of army colonels he had known. Squared away, buttoned up, a little gray and dusty, but driven by some kind of quiet internal vigor and confidence. Reacher took a table against the wall, at a distance, where he could see out the window over the other guy's head. Nothing was happening out there. The sentry was still leaning on the laundromat wall, not moving. The lights were on inside. There were no customers yet. A waitress came by, and Reacher ordered his go-to breakfast, which was coffee plus a short stack of pancakes with eggs, bacon, and maple syrup. The coffee arrived first. Black, fresh, hot, and strong. Pretty good. The Asian woman sat down at his table. She took a small vinyl wallet from her purse. She opened it up and held it out for inspection. On the left was a gold-colored shield. On the right was a photo ID behind a plastic window. It said, Nakamura, Gloria, Detective, Rapid City Police Department. It had a picture of her face. Dark eyes, a severe expression. She said, Were you in Wisconsin yesterday? Which told Reacher that Jimmy Rat had indeed made a phone call, and that the Rapid City PD was tapping Scorpio's line, which meant there was an active and ongoing investigation. Probably the typed transcript of Jimmy Rat's call was already the new top sheet in the 3-inch file. But out loud he said, Are you entitled to ask that question? Even as a cop? I have the right to privacy and the right to go where I want. It's a First Amendment thing. And a fourth.
Are you declining to answer my question?
No choice, I'm afraid. I was in the army. I swore an oath to uphold the Constitution. Can't stop now.
What's your name?
Reacher. First name Jack, no middle initial.
What did you do in the army, Mr. Reacher?
I was a military cop. A detective. Just like you.
And now you're a private investigator?
She glanced at the guy in the necktie as she said it. Reacher asked her, "Is that guy a private investigator?" She said,
"I decline to answer your question."
He smiled. He said, "I'm not a private investigator, just a private citizen. What did you hear from Wisconsin?"
"I'm not sure I should tell you."
"Cop to cop, because that's what we are."
"Are we?"
"If you want to be." She put her ID wallet back in her purse and took out her phone. She swiped through to a section with audio recordings. She chose one and touched an on-screen symbol. Reacher heard a plastic and distorted version of barroom noise, and then Jimmy Ratt's voice. He recognized it right away. It sounded fast and nervous. It said,
"Arthur, this is Jimmy. I just had a guy inquiring about an item I got from you. He seemed set on working his way along the chain of supply. I didn't tell him anything, but he already found me somehow, so what I'm thinking is maybe he'll somehow find you, too."
Nakamura touched the pause symbol. Reacher said, "Why would that be me?" She pressed play again. Jimmy Ratt said,
"If he does, take him seriously. That's my advice. This guy is like Bigfoot come out of the forest. Heads up, okay?"
Nakamura pressed stop. "Bigfoot?" Reacher said. "That's not very nice." She said,
"What item?"
"Does it matter? All I want to do is ask Scorpio a question. Then I'll be gone."
"Suppose he doesn't answer?"
"Jimmy in Wisconsin did."
"Scorpio has protection."
"So did Jimmy in Wisconsin."
"What item?"
Nakamura said again. Reacher dug in his pocket and came out with the ring. West Point 2005. The gold filigree, the black stone, the tiny size. He put it on the table. Nakamura picked it up. She tried it on. Third finger, right hand. It fit easily, even loosely. But then she was 5 feet nothing and weighed 95 pounds. Her fingers were about as thin as pencils. She took the ring off again. She weighed it in her palm. She looked at the inside, at the engraving. She asked,
"Who is SRS?
"I don't know," Reacher said.
"So what's the story?"
"I found it in a pawn shop in a small town in Wisconsin. It's not the kind of thing you would give up easily. This woman suffered 4 hard years to get it. Every day they tried to break her and make her quit. That's how West Point works. And 9/11 had just happened. Those were serious years. And what came afterward was worse. Iraq and Afghanistan. She might have sold her car or the watch she got from her aunt for Christmas, but she wouldn't have sold her ring."
"Does this guy Jimmy own the pawn shop?"
Reacher shook his head. "He's a local biker. Goes by the name Jimmy Ratt. He wholesaled the ring along with a bunch of other trinkets. He told me he got it from Arthur Scorpio here in Rapid City. So now I want to know who Arthur Scorpio got it from. That's the only question I want to ask him."
"He won't tell you."
"That's what the guy in the pawn shop said about Jimmy Ratt." Nakamura didn't reply. Nothing was happening out the window. The waitress came back with Reacher's meal. Pancakes, eggs, bacon, maple syrup. It looked good. He asked for more coffee. Nakamura ordered hot tea and a bran muffin. Reacher put the ring back in his pocket. The guy in the necktie got up and left. Still nothing happening out the window. Reacher asked, "What kind of private investigator is he?" Nakamura said,
"I didn't say he was.
I told you stuff, now you can tell me stuff." The waitress brought Nakamura's muffin. It was about as big as her head. She broke off a pea-sized crumb and ate it. She said,
"He's from Chicago.
His name is Terry Bramall. He's retired FBI. He finds missing persons." "Who is he looking for here?"
"I don't know."
"Is Scorpio a kidnapper, too?"
"We don't think so."
"Yet Mr. Bramall from Chicago is watching his place. Not just this morning. He was in the neighborhood last night. I saw him in the convenience store."
"You got in last night?"
Reacher nodded. "Pretty late."
"You came straight here from Wisconsin. This is important to you."
"I could have gotten here sooner. I took a nap in Sioux Falls."
"Exactly how did you get Arthur Scorpio's name from Jimmy Rat?"
"I asked him, nicely." She didn't reply. He carried on eating his breakfast. She sipped her tea. There was a long silence. Then she said,
"Arthur Scorpio is not well liked within the police department."
"Understood," Reacher said.
"Nevertheless, I am officially required to warn you against committing any kind of crime inside our jurisdiction."
"Don't worry," Reacher said. "All I'm going to do is ask him a question. No law against that."
"What if he doesn't answer?"
"I suppose that's always a theoretical possibility," Reacher said. She took a business card from her purse. She put it on the table near his coffee cup. She said,
"Those are my numbers, office and cell. Call me if you need to talk. Scorpio is a dangerous man. Never forget that."
She put $5 on the table for her tea and her muffin. Then she got up and left, out the door, along the sidewalk, and out of sight. Still nothing happening out the window. She had left her muffin, whole and untouched, apart from the pea-sized crumb she had eaten. So Reacher ate the rest of it, with another mug of coffee. Then he called for his check and asked for quarters in his change. He stopped in the restroom corridor where there was a payphone on the wall, just like there was in the bar in Wisconsin, which was where Jimmy Rat had made his call to Arthur Scorpio. The background noise proved it. Reacher had seen the guy loop around the line of bikes to the rear of the building, where he must have gone in the back door, where he must have seen the phone on the wall, where he must have decided upon an immediate warning. Right there and then, while Reacher was still outside, still talking to the county cop. Some kind of urgency. Reacher leaned on the wall where he could still watch the front window, and he dialed the same ancient number from memory. The same woman answered.
"West Point," she said. "Superintendent's office, how may I help you?"
"This is Reacher," he said.
"Wait one, Major."
She knew his rank. She had read his file. There was a click and a long silence, and then another click, and a man's voice said, "This is the soup?" The superintendent, the big boss, what any other college would call the president. Reacher said, "Good morning, General." Politely, but vaguely, because he didn't know the guy's name. He didn't keep up with alumni affairs. But the soup was always a general, usually smart and accomplished, sometimes progressive, never a pushover. The guy said, "Your inquiry yesterday was most irregular."
"Yes, sir," Reacher said, purely out of habit. In such situations, there were only three permissible responses at West Point. "Yes, sir, no excuse, sir."
The guy said, "I would like an explanation." So Reacher told the same story he had just gotten through telling Nakamura, about the pawn shop and the ring and his nagging sense of disquiet. The soup said, "So this is about a ring. It seems significant."